Blog Talk Radio.
Hey y'all, I'm here.
Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right.
Blue Magic. That's a brand name. Like Pepsi, that's a brand name. I stand behind it. I guarantee it. They know that, even if they don't know me any more than they know the chairman of General Mills.
What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is when you chop my dope down to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5%, and then you call it Blue Magic. That is trademark infringement. You understand what I'm saying?
All right, y'all. It's your girl, Denise. It is Manic Monday. I am back in New York State area, and it is August 17, 2015. I am sitting here shucking and jiving with my fresh corn on the cob. I didn't get to throw it on the grill. But we are back to the beat of it all. Tomorrow, Saladin will be on the ones and twos as well to have his Tell the Truth Tuesday. He's been doing really well at it while I've been out of town or working and doing what needs to be done. So today is Manic Monday, and I said, let's talk Texas. And I said, tonight I want to talk about all my epiphanies and the journey there, the journey back. I think it was significant. And there's several lessons that I learned while I was there, and I wanted to, you know, discuss, obviously, the food I ate, what I drank, poolside manner, and just different things that came to light. So let's start with the fact that I had to, like, yank my son real quick. I know y'all think, like, because, you know, I'm a mom to an 11-year-old, a preteen. And I think a lot of people, you know, assume that because I don't post a lot about my son, I don't post a lot about my son because I think that, you know, I'm trying to keep his life a little bit private, you know, and I ain't nobody, but I kind of am. So, and his father definitely is. So, you know, we ain't shit. We ain't nobody sometimes, but we kind of are. So I just try to protect him being a kid. And unfortunately, you know, I don't get to have forum with parents and things like that. And I do it just because I'm old school. So I was raised a certain way. You respect your, you know, your elders, and you do what the fuck I tell you to do, and that's just it. And so my son, who's 11 years old, he is my only child. His father has a daughter, which you've seen on my Instagram. So, but she looks just like my son, Cutie Pie. Love her. And if you are not following me on Instagram, make sure you follow me at miss.d.scott, or you can hashtag 0FUX, and then you can find me through there. I'm the, you know, the brown girl. And what ended up happening was I think he just got a little bit fucking confused about life. And, you know, I'm just in a different place as a parent where I'm an older parent, so I'm not this young parent that neglected my host role. I'm not a parent that didn't experience life, and so I'm trying to do things a little different. But I, you know, your children still have to have respect for you. And so, unfortunately, I think my son got confused and all that. And we had a situation, and I work so hard. You know, I work a million jobs, not a million jobs, but I do a million things to make sure that financially we're secure and we're okay, and I don't have to, you know, mess with this guy or do this bullshit job to make sure that bills get paid. And my son, in return of that, has never had to struggle. So his idea of struggle is he couldn't have cheesecake on National Cheesecake Day. You know, that's his idea of struggle. And that's my fault, you know, because I don't want my son to ever feel like, you know, there wasn't enough food, like there wasn't sometimes when we were coming up, or that there wasn't, you know, I remember, you know, helping raise my little brothers, you know, that we're all 3 years apart. So 9 years between my youngest brother and myself, and then, you know, but I feel like, you know, he was a little fucking confused that day, and I had to snap the fuck out on him. And also, I was very anxious. So, you know, you have a situation where, you know, my son didn't see his dad for 3 years, you know, and so I don't post a lot because I don't like to talk shit about his dad, because a lot of people don't understand. When you post things on Facebook and on Instagram, things like that, it's a record. So whether or not you deleted it or whatever happened, it doesn't matter because it's still out there. So I don't want to say bad things about his dad, but I'm in a place right now where I want to tell the truth. So, you know, he didn't see his dad for 3 years. His dad is remarried, you know, and they have a beautiful little girl, which is my son's sister. I'm very clear about that. And, you know, my mom was married many times, 4 times to be exact. She was that bad. Like, motherfuckers be like, oh, my God, what happened? No, my mom collectively was married well over 30 years, like more than half her life. And, you know, she just, whatever it was that she had that motherfuckers wanted to marry her, I mean, that's what it was. My mother was beautiful. She was a homemaker. You know, that's what she did. And then, you know, she spent the last, you know, years of her life, like, working, and then we retired her because she became very ill. But, you know, it was hard for her. And so some of the mistakes that she made, I don't make as a parent. So, yeah, you know, I came to this epiphany that, you know, by any means necessary, on some Malcolm X parenting type shit, I needed to do whatever I needed to do to make sure that my son was near his father. You know, he needs his daddy. I can't teach you to, you know, pee standing up. And, you know, shout out to the single moms out there, but, like, let's be clear, it's not the fucking same. You know, it's not the same, and I'm going to bring in the Caitlyn Jenner situation here, where Khloe Kardashian, fellow moon child, fellow Cancer, Cancerian, her, and Joyce Benelli, shout out to Joyce Benelli, who is actually Kim, Khloe, the whole family's makeup artist. That's why their skin always looks dewy and flawless. She's also a Cancer as well, so we're real big on family. And, you know, they had to get in Bruce Jenner's ass, Caitlyn, whatever the fuck y'all want to call him. And I don't have an issue with Caitlyn Jenner. I have an issue with my 11-year-old son coming to me saying, Mom, what do you think about her? And I said, well, you know what, I don't think about it at all. Because it's hard enough, and a lot of people aren't understanding the impact of what this is doing. So, yeah, that's great for the transgender community. But now you have Target saying that they don't want gender-specific places in their store, and they don't want, you know, to label things boys and girls, and then the bathrooms, and then now you're causing other situations to happen, which we won't feel the impact of that for another 15 to 20 years, you know. And so it's a hard enough time trying to explain puberty to my son, and pubic hair and sweat glands and, you know, pH balance and braces and everything else, than to have to explain the Caitlyn Jenner situation, who D.L. Hughley, bless his soul, and shout out to my boy David Raybon, who is from Cali, that actually did some writing for him comedy-wise for probably over a decade. But D.L. Hughley was on the show with Raven Simone's Weird Ass and all them. And I think it's called The View or something, The Real, whatever, The Tea, whatever the fuck it's called, The Talk, with Whoopi Goldberg and them. And he said, look, he said, let me be very clear. He said, you know, America's so messed up, because we'll say that, you know, Venus and Serena look like men, but yet we'll say that Caitlyn Jenner looks beautiful. And he was like, just because I don't agree, you know, it's not that one thing outrages me more than the other. I can have different outrages. And he said, that's just absolutely ridiculous that we would say that Caitlyn Jenner is beautiful and she's a hero, but we don't say that Serena or Venus is beautiful, and they're actually really women. He said, when I see Venus and Serena, I want to have sex with them. When I see Bruce Jenner, a.k.a. Caitlyn, he's like, I don't know if I want to beat her up, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, so, and I understood that, and that made perfect sense. And then, you know, we have the situation where, you know, things get expensive, you know, when you're trying to co-parent. And, you know, I have liability issues, because it's like, well, you know what, Mom, you travel all the time anyways. You couldn't take me to Houston, and I knew that that conversation was coming. So, you know, and plus he missed his dad, and he said, I'll forego all the gifts for, you know, Christmas, my birthday, whatever. He knows there's no Santa, all that. You know, he's a smart kid. And he's like, Mom, there's no way Santa could fit down all the chimneys in America and all over the world, and not everyone has chimneys. And he, like, did this whole psychological breakdown and as to why it was an impossibility Santa existed, so it's cool. The jig is up. And that's me back on my Carmen year, because that's my truth serum. That's, you know, my very, very nice Italian red wine, Carmen year. And I usually drink it at Wine on Third, but tonight we're in studio. So we had a situation where, you know, I was looking at my budget, and I do budget, okay, I do. And I was just like, where the fuck is my money going? Like, and it's not that I didn't have any money, I'm just like, where the fuck is it going? And so when you have a parent that is unable to pull his full weight or to do what needs to be done, and you know, it's going to sound harsh, so I'm going to just go ahead and say it, and whether they're listening or not, doesn't matter. I do what the fuck I'm supposed to do by my child. And so I don't have more than one child because I can't afford it. I simply cannot. Like, between, you know, the daycare or the private school or the nanny, which my son had all of those things, I just, if I couldn't do it that way or better for my new baby and be married and be happy, then I don't want it, you know. And I'm at that age, you know, where I can decide I don't want to get married, or I just want a partner or a life partner, or I don't want children. But let's be fucking clear. I can still have an abundance of motherfucking babies, especially when I'm the age that I am and I have a 22-year-old sister and we're 18 years apart. Let's be clear. Good-ass genes, and we, you know, we take care of ourselves. So I needed to make a pit stop in Pittsburgh, which is nothing. It's a 3.5-4-hour drive to my family's home. I have, you know, probably 50% of my family is there, 70%, 50, 60, 70%. And I snuck in town. You know, we went to Minio's Pizza, had that, drank some champagne, did my show last week. So my Manic Monday show last week was from Pittsburgh. The trip hadn't happened yet. My not-so-little cousin Steven, who I remember him, you know, who comes from a very prominent family in Chicago, but, you know, is my aunt's son. You know, we had this amazing conversation until like 3 in the morning, probably 2 in the morning, I'm sorry, because then I had to go to bed and be right back up at 5. And so I started to become tearful because, you know, here I am, like, making all these sacrifices for myself. I'm just fucking tired. Like, I'm really exhausted. I'm really tired. I work 7 days a week all the time, not just like regular jobs, like what people think, but just, you know, writing and reading and studying. And, you know, I don't just watch reality TV just to fucking watch it. I'm watching it because I'm trying to figure out what's going on or what avenues I need to be at or what events I need to be at or get a press pass for so that I can politic and do what I need to do. And, you know, this summer was just really hard for me because I'm trying to work. And it felt like my money was just like going out the window. And then I realized, like, I'm not getting help coming down there because child support is supposed to be for the support of the child. And I'm actually, you know, from what I hear on the street, one of the few moms that actually does take the money. Like, and, you know, I had to explain to my son, you know, not for nothing, but like, I don't get fucking free groceries. So when I go to the store and buy sharp cheddar cheese and, you know, thinly sliced turkey with honey in it and, you know, real corn and real, you know, I don't know if y'all have been to buy produce or fruits and vegetables lately, but, like, shit's expensive. A bag of cherries was $10. So, you know, if I'm dropping, you know, $600 and $700 a month for my family to eat, and that's just what we're eating. That's not rent. That's not mortgage. That's not car. That's not gas. Like, don't fucking talk to me about what your kids have and I have to pay money. Like, when you pay for your food with a debit card instead of EBT, then you come fucking talk to me about, you know, because everyone always wants to act like they know what the fuck I'm doing in life, and you really don't. And so I had an issue with a gentleman at one point where he was talking about the fact that he drove a specific type of luxury car, and I'm like, yeah, but if any of your baby's moms are on fucking public assistance, you shouldn't be driving that car, because what that lets me know is that according to the government, you're really broke as fuck, and your baby's mom can't afford with your salary and her salary put together whatever the fuck that is, and that's why y'all shouldn't be procreating with bum bitches, okay? Because I'm told you, I'm more worried about the bum than I am any white girl, Spanish girl, any broad in America. I'm worried about the bum bitch. That is, she is the real threat to humanity and society. So, you know, I'm sitting there thinking about, like, all the sacrifices that I made to get to this moment, and then I have my son where I feel like he didn't get it. You know, so we had a little issue, and he says to me, you know, Mom, I don't hit you. I said, wait a motherfucking minute. Wait a minute. And you never motherfucking will. Let's be clear. No, no, I'm just telling you, there's kids out there and you won't be one of them. Come on, I don't hit you and I don't cuss at you. And guess what? You never fucking will. Okay? And it was so terrible for me because It's the eve of the night I'm taking you to see your dad. I've sacrificed. I've worked. I'm tired. I don't sleep. You know, I'm up on a nap. I had to force myself to sleep, you know, the night before to make sure, you know, I'm doing all this for you, and you want to be a little disrespectful little shit right now to me. And he's crying. I'm crying, you know, because it was a defining moment as a parent where my demon slipped out a little bit, and he was afraid. And he's like, Mommy, you know, you're not my mom, and I don't know who you are right now. And, you know, and I have to share this because these are the coming to Jesus meetings that are going to happen when you are 5'6", and your son is 5'1", 5'2", 140. Y'all weigh the same. Y'all wear the same size clothes and shoes. This is a fucking problem. So he says, I don't even know who you are. I said, you know, and it reminded me of Ghost on Power when he was telling Angela, you know, this is who I really am. So if you love me, you loved all of this about me. I just never had to show you that side. And so I said to my son, I said, there is a reason that people don't fuck with your mother. There is a reason that people don't disrespect me on a daily basis, and that I'm respected in the community and in the writing field and at my job. And, you know, there's a reason that your father is fucking terrified of me. You know, and it's not because of anger and violence. It's because of the fact I am who I said I was. I'm doing what I came here to do, which was to be your mother. So it doesn't mean that I'm not your mom just because I'm upset with you at this time. But let's just be clear. You know, I allowed my son that moment because I could see, like, you know, the little men have something in their chest, like they want to say something to you. And I was like, you know, do you feel like you want to, you know, say something to me, get it off your chest, because in this moment, it's okay. Don't come to me with this shit tomorrow. In this moment, it's okay for you to tell me what's on your mind, because the rate of suicide amongst black men, black young men, is very high. I would never want my son, and especially, you know, a year after Robin Williams' suicide, you know, someone that was seemingly so happy, you know, I don't ever want my son to feel like, you know, it was the end of the world. I had an issue with my mom, and I'm going to go, you know, do something to myself. No, say whatever you need to say, and then I'm going to tell you why that's not true. And so he's down there with his dad. They're having a great time. He's barely calling me, which is good, because that means that they are enjoying their time as men. And that is something that I'm very thankful for, because I'm not a man, and I don't care what you fucking women say. You're not a fucking man either. You're not a man. And I don't care if you don't know who your baby's daddy is, you better fucking find out, because you're going to need him. And so I don't subscribe to the philosophy, I don't need no man, I never say that, because I feel like, I'm going to get to the real reason why later, but as far as fathers are concerned, it's important. And if you don't have a proper father, you have your daughters looking for that father figure with ninjas from the street. You have your son looking for that father figure in these gangs and in the street and just in other females and just trying to be taken care of. And, you know, there's an issue with moms too, but I don't have a fucking issue. So now I get to Houston. Everything went off seemingly perfect. TSA pre-check, everything's great. My son, of course, forgets the neck pillow in the truck because we parked in Pittsburgh. You know, we stayed the night. I stayed up with my cousin all night, which we talked about that, you know, when I was there. And I've been, you know, talking about it on Facebook. And so we get there, and I'm agitated. I'm waiting on my girl Jahari. Shout out to her and Tristan. I know they're listening. We're going to get to them too. And he's like, well, I don't know where you are. I'm like, listen. And in my head, I'm so upset. I want to cuss this motherfucker to fuck out, his father, because I'm like, I'm at A121, whatever the fuck that is. I have came 2,300 miles plus to bring this boy to you and hand deliver him to you, and you can't even fucking find where we're at in the airport. So I get down there. He's with the baby. So we had to actually leave where we were standing to go downstairs to meet his father, wherever the fuck they were at. And, you know, I see the new wife, you know, quote unquote, and she's got on her, you know, her work scrubs. She's a nurse or something like that. And I see the baby, cutie pie, and, you know, the son and my ex-husband. And then I realize that, because I'm going to just go ahead and put this shit out there, the new wife has driven there in a separate car on her lunch break. Let me, you know, this is an issue. Let me be really, really fucking clear. And I had this conversation with Chris Classic about almost a year ago, where it's funny that the new one, the new girl, always is worried about the ex-wife. Wife. Not girlfriend, not baby's mom. Wife. Don't worry about us. You know why? Because if it was meant for us to be with that motherfucker, we would be with him. Nobody wants that motherfucker but you. And I'm using motherfucker as just a term like person. Okay? You didn't need to come to the fucking airport. And, you know, we're forging a new relationship and all that's cool. You don't have a relationship with my son. It's not like you're best friends with my son and you call him on your own accord. And these are people that are sitting there saying that they want my son to have a cell phone. They want to get my son a cell phone. Why? Because you have to call my cell phone or my parents' house. They don't have the main house's number. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't understand what is the motherfucking problem. You know, you're sitting here saying, he needs a cell phone. No, he needs fucking health insurance. Like, I pay for his health insurance. Per the divorce, the ex-husband is supposed to pay for it. And you're talking about a fucking cell phone, and it's coming out of my budget every month for the last 7 years, not a problem, to pay health insurance. And you guys are worried about menial shit like a cell phone because of an insecurity that really has nothing to do with me. I have never, since my ex-husband and I have been divorced, let me be clear. We were a team. We are co-parents. So my ex-husband, after we were divorced, like 2 or 3 years after we were divorced, actually came back and lived with us in Florida. I had a boyfriend. He had a girlfriend. Actually, his girlfriend was in Houston, and it wasn't her. So I don't understand where this is coming from. And there's always this weird conversation about, like, you know, oh, you're going to have another baby? Motherfucker, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, again, I'm single until I'm married. And you'll know. Trust me. And, you know, it's funny because if you ask my son, you know, you want mommy to, you know, get a boyfriend and get married. He's like, no, mom, you're emotionally unstable. And I said, everyone's emotionally unstable. He's like, no, mom, not like you. I think you should just focus on your craft, focus on your work, focus on your writing. But this is coming from an 11-year-old. And I said, well, daddy, you know, found somebody and he's in love and they move forward. He's like, yeah, but that's dad, your mom. And I really don't want to see that. You know what I mean? And so this is what a lot of people don't understand is that I don't bring dudes around my kid. And if they are, they're introduced as like a friend or whatever. This is your uncle, this is mommy's boyfriend, like nothing of the sort. But I also don't make promises to my son to say like it's just always going to be me and you and things like that because I watch a lot of shows and read a lot of literature where that one promise, these boys, especially young male children, black male children, you know, they take that to heart and they think like, well, mom, I'll protect you. I'll take care of you. I don't need you to take care of me. I don't ever want my son to feel like he has to take care of me because that's not his job. Your job is to be a fucking kid and go out and do whatever the fuck you want to do. And I'm here to finance it and to support you because a lot of times I didn't get that financial backing from my parents because they just didn't fucking have it. You know, they had more than one child, you know, and I asked him, you want me to have another baby? Mom, I don't want to. I think I'm enough. You know what I mean? I'm like, but your dad has, mom, it's different, you know. So we get to the airport. I see her there. I realize that they drove in separate cars, and I haven't had the opportunity to have a conversation with the new wife about some of the previous things over the 3 years that we've gone through or that he may have told her or any of that shit. And I feel like I want to have this conversation with her, and I said to her, I said, you know, you're a smart girl. Certain shit at a certain time doesn't make motherfucking sense. You know, you have to understand that, you know what I mean, and understand that it's not all my fault. If you're his third goddamn wife, it cannot be all Denise. It can't be, and I was the second wife. Let's be clear. You know, so and he was my only husband. I've been engaged 6 times, but that was the only time I got married. He was very smart, though. He did it very quickly. You know, we were engaged and married, and I brag about this, in 90 days because it doesn't take that long. So we get to Houston. I see that. My girl Jahari, you know, she pulls up. You know, she comes and grabs me. And, you know, just so hospitable, always when I'm in Houston, you know, just the friendship network that I have there. You know, we go to, you know, check into my girl, you know, Rachel's apartment, whatever, make sure everything was cool. And we go to the liquor store. Of course, Margarita Heaven, we go back to her crib, we listen to the show because I do my edits because after the show's over, I have to do my edits. I listen to it. 99% of the time, I don't edit shit out. I just leave it and just be like, fuck it. But I want to listen to it. So we sat there, we talked, and then I go back to the apartment. It starts raining because I'm convinced that sometimes it gets so fucking hot in Texas that it will just rain just for God to calm down. Like, we drove from the airport and no bullshit, the grass was on fucking fire. For no motherfucking reason, the grass on the outside of the airport was on fucking fire. That's how goddamn hot it was. Listen, it was so hot, we took a night swim, and it felt like a bath. If we'd have just poured some bubbles in there, we'd have all been squeaky clean. So, because I know that there are people listening, let me get it all nice and picturesque for you. So we get there, we have our margaritas, we go back to the crib, then she drops me off. She comes back with my brisket tacos from Taco Cabana, which I know that's not the best place to get tacos in Houston, but I like it. I like their beans and rice. Don't fuck with the guac because I don't like avocados. But so I'm sitting there, I eat that. I make some tamales, some corn tamales because her fiance, boyfriend, you know, significant other, Tris, is vegan. So I make that, and I'm praying that he didn't eat the shucks, like the the corn skin, because sometimes, like, when people eat tamales, they don't know that you're supposed to, like, just push it up kind of like a Freezy Pop, and you're not supposed to eat the corn part. So hopefully he didn't judge me and added his own salt and pepper, because typically we add meat to the tamale, but I didn't need to because, you know, that's what it was. So that night, everything goes well. And I always have these epiphanies when I'm in Houston because I'm very relaxed. I don't have an itinerary. I don't have a schedule. I'm not rushing here or there. Now, let me get to the bullshit. So my homeboy, who is from here, from New York, he has a place down there. He owns a construction company. And he is, you know, he's all over the place. So he's in L.A. He's here. So he's like, listen, and it was the week of his birthday, so I was leaving actually like the day before his birthday. And this is like the homie. And one of the things that we talked about on the Tell the Truth Tuesday show last week when we actually, me, Tristan, and Jahari, actually called in from the pool. Guy was out barbecuing, you know, great place in the Galleria area. And we called in and we were talking about the CLO, which is the Comparison Level Alternative. You will hear me talk about it all the fucking time. And so, like, 11 o'clock at night, we're sitting there, we're drinking, and Mickey, you know, my homeboy Mickey calls me, and he's like, did you go by the house and get the keys? Now, I'm not realizing that Jahari and them live, like, two blocks away from where I was, and then he lives, like, two blocks the other way where I was at. So I'm like, that's pretty cool, you know, so I guess I'm in the right area. Okay. Like, minutes from the Gallery Mall, like, we were right there. So everything's right there. I love the area. I loved it. And so we go over to his crib. We're, like, locked out the gate, locked out the fence. So we have to get the keys and all this stuff. So we go in there. He's on the phone with us. We finally make it in. He left the keys, wasn't even in town, you know. He was somewhere else handling business. And he's like, go ahead, stay there. And I'm like, no, I don't want to stay here. And you're not here. And he had just moved down there, like, 3 months ago. So right when I came back from the last trip, he was actually moving down there because he got a job building up some high-rises downtown. So he was with his project manager somewhere else. And I thought that was pretty fucking cool because I feel like, you know, this is somebody that's never went out with me. There's no romantic interest as of yet, but he's a man, so we don't know. You know, and there's no attachment. And this is somebody that's like, here, come stay at my crib. There's bottles of Jamaican rum there. There's this, there's that. Take whatever the fuck you need out of the house and y'all go hang out, y'all party. Use the amenities. And I want to say that I really appreciate that because a lot of times women get in situations with guys that can't offer them shit. You know what I mean? And they'll choose the guy that can't offer them shit over the guy that's saying, here's my whole fucking world. Take it. You want to go with, you know, some bullshit feelings or some history or some, you know, oh, but we've known each other. Man, fuck that. I took them keys. I went back to my homegirl's house. So I had not one, not two, but three places to stay. And then the motherfucker that I did fuck with in Houston, I don't got keys to your house. I don't got keys to your, you know what I'm saying, to your gates and your mailboxes and everything else. And so I feel like it was kind of like a fuck you moment. It was kind of like a, you know, an epiphany to say that, like, if motherfuckers really gave a fuck about you, they would make sure that you were okay, and they would make sure that you were taken care of, and your friends are taken care of, and you're good. You know, that's what I'm used to. That's what I make sure that people do. And so when you come from a situation where you ain't gave up nothing to a motherfucker but some lipstick and a smile, and he's not even there, that was some G-ass shit that really put things into perspective to say that this is how you function. So maybe you should be dealing with and functioning with people that are like you. You know what I mean? And instead of being, you know, prideful or stubborn or mean and nasty, like if you can help somebody, help them. So I didn't end up staying at the homie's house. His birthday was that Friday. He came back to town and then he flew right back out. I think he's in LA right now. But I just want to say definitely, Mickey, thank you. I appreciate it. We did drink up that motherfucking, you know, that Jamaican rum, and we stole some other shit out. Look, we stole like Pepsi out the house to make drinks. But it was nice. It was nice to feel like somebody had your back and that, like, you had options and you didn't have to, you know, rely on anybody, because I didn't. I mean, I already had a place to stay. And even if I didn't, when I came down in April, I stayed at the hotel, dropped almost over $1,000 just, you know, staying at, like, some, you know what I'm saying, like, just a regular chain hotel, you know, to make sure that my son was able to see his dad. So then the next day that I was there, that was Wednesday, that day I really didn't do anything. You know, I kind of just chilled. I got burnt the fuck up on my face. My girl went to the Jill Scott concert because her girlfriend was in town. My other homies, Robert and Liz, didn't get to come through. So I just took that time to just kind of reflect, be by myself. And I know there's a lot of women out there that say, like, yeah, you needed that break as a parent. You needed that break from your kid. I don't ever need a break from my fucking son. Never, ever, ever. I don't even understand what that means, because for me, I'm a parent 365 fucking days of the year, 24 hours a fucking day, whether he's in my sight or not. That's why I'm so good to his teachers and to people that are around him, because y'all are the people that get to share this experience with me the other hours of the day that I'm not with him. So I make sure, you know what I'm saying, when Christmas comes and when they need, you know, apple pies for the school, for, you know, whatever, I'm always first in line. And so the decision came about, and it just, you know what, I love Houston, because it's a place that, you know, I've done New York, I've done Toronto. Those are like my second homes, and we do have, you know, places, you know, to go when we're there. You know, we have homes there, but you know, I just feel like I'm excited to make Houston my home, like the place where I get to grow a little bit, because I've been there so many times over the years. And literally, let's be clear, in case my ex didn't know, because he's like, well, you know, because we were going to move out to Katy, but now I'm entertaining the Galleria area per Kendra, because I'm not married. I'm not, you know, in a serious relationship. We'll put that out there, in a serious relationship. I'm not, so I don't need to be necessarily in a suburb where I'm secluded from people. I'm only going to be around other couples and shit like that. And I'm not a couple. I'm not part of a team. I'm a single mom, literally. And so when I was in Houston, it became very clear, you out here by yourself, baby girl. And, you know, although you have friends and family that you can call upon, just make sure that you understand you take care of yourself first. And so I started, you know, talking to the realtor about places in the Galleria area, which, let's be clear, to buy a two-bedroom condo, I think there was one that was like $600,000, like the cheapest was like $600,000. But, you know, what are you going to do? I need three bedrooms, so one, you know, one for the office. But then again, there's apartments and things like that, but they have one of the better high schools in the, I think it's called like the Inner Houston School District, whatever it's called, but it's 10 out of 10. You can't fucking get better than that. And there's too many people there that have too much money for that school to be shit. There's no way. So, you know, it kind of changed the perspective a little bit on what my focus was going to be on when I came there. Because at first when I came there, I was just going to, you know, dive right in and just be like, I'm not working, but I have my savings, I have my businesses, and now I'm just kind of like, get a job and move. So that could be, you know, I wouldn't pull my son out of school, but that could be, you know, 6 months from now. That could be, you know, a year and a half from now. But I will be there. I'm pretty sure it's going to be sooner than later, of course. And again, you know, if I get the position that I want there with who I want it with, then this, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm out of here. And then I discovered the Montrose area, which I love that. Love the whole eclectic thing. It reminds me a lot of, like, the Village in New York and things like that. So I just love, love, love Houston. And every time I go there, I'm always meeting someone interesting. I'm always, you know, picking up, you know, people along the way. And so as I was on my way back to the airport, which, by the way, missed my fucking flight home by, like, 10 minutes, met, you know, was seated next to a guy who is a Liberian soccer player, you know what I'm saying, that lives in Houston, was traveling to Charlotte because I had to go to Charlotte, then from Charlotte to Pittsburgh, then from Pittsburgh drive home. That's the sacrifice that I make as a fucking parent. And I started getting, like, really offended when I, because I have brothers that are parents, and, you know, it's just, you know, I get really offended when people start bickering and arguing about who's going to pick the kid up from school. Motherfucker, I wish my ex-husband could pick my son up from school. You know what I mean? I wish that he was here and all we had to argue about was a fucking backpack, you know, or school supplies. You know what I mean? I'm traveling literally that Thursday. I traveled for 12 hours. I was stranded in Charlotte Airport. I couldn't really drink because the minute that I got off the plane in Pittsburgh, I have to drive home. You know, my debit card, they cut it off because they were like, bitch, you were in fucking 3-4 states in 12 hours. You're going to need to call us and verify that you are who the fuck you say you are. So, you know, it was the worst trip, but it was like the best trip. So I get a lot of solitude. Like every time I'm in Houston, I get this solitude. And so, you know, as I'm sitting there talking to this young kid, this is some funny shit because this only happens to me, seriously. So my friend Mickey never comes back. He was in San Antonio for business, whatever, Texas A&M or whatever school is over there he has a contract with. So kudos to him because, I mean, he's a boss for real. Like, for a motherfucker to leave you keys to his crib and you ain't never even, y'all ain't never even shared a bottle of liquor together, just off GP of him knowing me and my family and from being from, you know, my hometown and things like that. That was like some G shit, so I'm really appreciative of that. And definitely, like, my friends, you know, Jahari and Tristan, they stayed the night, like, with me up at the pool, and we're just all hanging out. And they lived so close to where I was that they were able to go home, grab their swim shit, and just, like, take in the moment, you know, and jump in the pool at night as adults. You know what I'm saying? And it was raining, and it was mad cool. It was mad awesome. We had our drinks. You know, she brought back her little margaritas and shit. It was really a good time. So with Houston, the funny thing is I didn't even go out. I didn't go out. I didn't Uber anywhere. I didn't rent a car this time. I didn't even go to the mall because I felt like that's not what I was here for. I'm here looking for something and trying to define something and trying to discover something and figure something out. And the only way that I'm going to do that was the first time I sat down and read one of my magazines, one of my magazine articles. It was the first time that, like, I sat down and ate a meal by myself. Like, and if I didn't want to put vegetables with it, I didn't have to. You know, it was the first time I just, like, walked across the street to the store. You know what I mean? To get coconut oil, of course, because my skin was burnt the fuck up. You know, so it was really good. And it's always good going there. And then, of course, you know, the homie didn't get back in time. So the next day I roll out, and I had to leave at like 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. And I had a 10 o'clock flight. Of course, 2 hours in Houston traffic, I missed the flight. And it's funny because I wasn't even mad. I was, like, very calm about it. I'm like, maybe it wasn't meant for me to be on that fucking flight. And so it is what it is. And so I'm sitting in the airport. I have my Starbucks. I'm cool. We meet the soccer player. We're talking. And let me, this is the funny shit that I keep avoiding because it's too fucking funny. It reminds me of the episode on Sex and the City with Samantha when she's, like, stood up in the restaurant and she's like waiting for someone, like this young guy to come, and she keeps ordering wine and shit, and they're like, honey, did you want another? She's like, no, I'm good. And then, like, finally, like, she goes, like, 2 hours later to the bathroom, and the waiter says to her, you know, if you were mine, I would never stand you up. And she ends up making out with the fucking waiter by the bathroom, and then she gives him, like, a tip. That's how I felt. So I'm sitting there, and he's obviously probably way younger than me. I could be wrong. Very handsome and very, very nice looking, very well spoken, still has an accent. And it just so happened that when I missed the flight, it's because it's just kind of what it is in the world of Denise. And he sits next to me. We're sitting there. Everything's cool. And he says to me, so where are you from? And we're talking. And so we're sitting there. We hit a little bit of turbulence. You know, he's drinking, and I'm just drinking my soda because, you know, I don't want to get off the plane and be drunk. And nice thighs, nice back, beautiful skin tone. You know, we're talking about Africa. We're talking about Israel and, you know, just different places that he's been. And, you know, we hit a little turbulence. So cute. He grabs my hand. And he's, like, holding my hand. And I'm so, like, emotionally and just physically exhausted that I just let him hold my fucking hand. And it's funny because those people that know me know that I don't like people touching me at all. I don't like people in my space. I don't, you know what I mean? I can be celibate for, like, long periods of time, like years, if need be. So, but when I let loose, you finna get the machine gun. So then he goes, no, you can lay your head on my shoulder. You don't have to, you know, sleep like that. And I'm window seat, you know, he's right next to me. We had, like, the whole aisle. And I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm really good. He's like, no, it's okay. So he takes, like, my little face with his little hand, and he just, like, leans my head on his shoulder, and I'm so tired. You know what I mean? Because I've been up since 5 o'clock in the morning arranging transportation and making sure that, you know, I got to the airport on time, which I wasn't on time, and just making sure that my girl's crib was cleaned up and, you know, nothing, you know, was out of place and just everything was folded neatly, whatever, smelled like Febreze and bleach. And I just let him. I was like, man, fuck it, I'm tired. I'm just, and you know, I told you, Boom didn't bring the neck pillow, which normally saves my life in these situations. And because I'm cheap, I refuse to buy one in the airport. So we leave each other in Charlotte because we met in Houston. We leave each other in Charlotte. We exchange information. So, you know, he's somebody that, you know, you keep in touch with people like that. That's why I love Houston, because it doesn't matter whether it's a hairdresser, white, black, African, Liberian. It doesn't matter. Like, there's always somebody. If you're positive and if your energy is good and your vibe is good, you're going to always be meeting someone in Houston. I think because it's South, like deep South, like people keep forgetting, like, that's still the South. That's still Texas. So I've never had a problem in Houston, ever. So, and again, all my exes live in Texas. My ex-husband ain't the only one. There's 4 of them down there. So, you know, we've kept in touch. My homeboy might be in town when I get back in town. He might not, you know what I'm saying, because I have to go back in, like, less than 2 weeks now to pick Boom up, you know. So it was, to me, it's worth it. It's always worth it. And, of course, this time I think we're going to be down on a weekend. We're going to be down, like, a Saturday, Sunday, Monday situation, so I can turn up just a little bit, because I haven't really, you know, done much since I've been in Houston, but just, you know, last time I was in Houston, my grandmother died, you know what I'm saying? So this time it's like, you know, and it was the first time that I'm seeing my ex-husband and his, you know, new wife and the baby. It was just, Houston is just always full of epiphanies for me, so I always embrace that growth and whatever that moment is trying to tell me. And so, you know, then I finally get back to, you know, Pittsburgh. I'm so tired. Then I have to get in the car and drive 4 hours. So I was en route to get back to New York, upstate New York, by Canada, from 7:30 in the morning until 12 midnight. You know what I mean? And so it really upsets me when I hear about a lot of these motherfuckers talking about shit that they got to go through with their kids and all this other shit. Like, don't fucking talk to me about nothing. You know what I mean? Like, again, I'm the wrong motherfucking person to talk to about that. And so now we're going to get into Straight Outta Compton, because I had to address this with someone in the blogs. And sometimes I troll the blogs and I don't say anything and then I'll snap out on somebody. And somebody was like, you know, fuck that shit. Yeah, NWA wrote, you know, fuck, or Straight Outta Compton, whatever, talking about killing police, but they also wrote a song about running a train on a 14-year-old girl, and I'm like, and he's like, and they're not my heroes and all this other shit. And I had to, you know, he had to get the clap back for that, because I said, you know what, the bottom line is that, so you have, you know, a man that was married to his wife now for 27 years, I believe. That's a hero, okay? You have a man that has children to all one woman right now. That's a hero. You have one man, black man, let's be clear, that surfaced on the Forbes list as one of the, you know, the prominent black billionaires in hip hop, which we don't see that kind of money in hip hop. So, you know, I don't know about you, but I remember when NWA first came out with the, you know, that whole situation, and the fuck the police and all that other stuff, like, and, you know, NWA and, you know, Public Enemy and that whole situation. Yeah, that was during the Rodney King era. So you're talking about 25 years ago. What the fuck were you doing? Were you even here 25 years ago? Like, so don't talk about people that went on to become iconic in an age when hip-hop, motherfuckers was getting killed over hip-hop. You know, the legends that came out of that era, you understand what I'm saying? Like, Ice Cube owns a production company, and let's be clear, that was actually his son that played him, and if I'm not mistaken, Eazy-E's son is who played him in the movie as well, who his son is also a rapper. A lot of people don't know that. And anything that brings AIDS awareness, you know what I'm saying, to light, because Eazy-E, aside from Magic Johnson, was one of the first black people that we knew outside of anybody in your family that had the virus. You know what I'm saying? Like, you didn't hear about that, and it was from dealing with a porn star and dealing with this one and dealing with that one and just that whole lifestyle. So I think, like, in the age of Chris Brown, where people are having to get paternity tests, like, why the fuck are we getting paternity tests? Like, why are we even sleeping with women and you're quote-unquote Chris Brown? Why are we sleeping with motherfuckers with no protection on and you're Chris motherfucking Brown? Why are you having a baby's mom situation and not a legacy situation? Like, I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, in that era, so I had to give somebody the business because he was saying this, 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 and I said, and, you know, coming from a standpoint of somebody that wants to do an independent film, this film grossed over $60 million, you know, its opening weekend. So, you know, until you tell me that you could do it better, don't fucking talk to me about something that black men, first you want us to stand up for you, now you're going to shoot down black men. Come and get the, you guys got to pick a fucking struggle, black man. And again, like I said before, these are these quote-unquote conscious, you know, black men and all this other shit. You ain't got to like it. You ain't got to support it, but you got to respect it because you're not, on, like I said before, you ain't on the motherfucking Forbes list. So you don't have a right to disrespect the motherfucker that's on the motherfucking list consistently. You understand what I'm saying? Dre is on the Forbes list. So for them to be from, and again, I haven't seen it. I'm going to see it tomorrow. I'll be the motherfucker with the big purse and the wine in the cup, in the sippy cup with snacks. I already got them in the fridge, you know, because that's how I roll. But because I wanted to wait for the hype to come out so I can critique it from a writer standpoint, from everything. But I know that there was a lot of input from the actual members. This is not, you know, the Nina Simone story with Zoe Saldana that fucking should be ashamed to even come out right now because, you know, the real Nina Simone story came out on Netflix. So it's like, don't insert your Netflix consciousness into Hollywood box office big screen royalty and you, like, call me back when you get a production company. Or, again, my favorite go-to line, when you marry your baby's mom, then you come back and you fucking talk to me about Straight Outta Compton. You know, it was an era. It was that time. I don't give a shit what we're talking about. If it's bringing up issues that we in the black community can address and can talk about, let's talk about it. You know what I mean? Because I don't know any other black films that came in, you know, written, directed, produced, starred, you know, and with legacy issue that grossed $60.2 million, not the original 58.5 that was originally, you know, undermined and speculated. So, you know, you have to give people credit about that. So then we have the issue with, I have to say this because it's on right now, the Caitlyn Jenner situation with Khloe and Kim. And basically they told, you know, Caitlyn, because I think that there's a misconception that just because you come out of the closet or whatever, you could say whatever the fuck you want. You see that Bruce Jenner is struggling with, you know, being who he is and saying who he is. But like they said, you don't get to hurt people on your way up. You know what I mean? We get it. You're here. This is your moment. But you don't get to hurt people on your way up. So I just feel like people that I don't judge just because I don't give a fuck. It's not my family. You know, I have my own, you know, family issues. But again, it's just not something, you know, transgender is just, it's an entirely different thing that people need to be educated about because it's not about being gay or being bisexual. It's something completely different. And it's funny when people try to check me on this and I'm like, motherfucker, have you seen my family? Do you know anything about me at all? No. You know what I fucking tell you, because some things are none of your motherfucking business. So then let's get into the, this is funny, the Love and Hip Hop. I have to talk about my ratchetness. Oh, my God. I can't with Bambi and Lil Scott. Like, who are these fucking people anyways? They're like, to me, they're like regular people. It's like watching your cousin on television. And it's funny because the minute that, and this is what I want you men to understand, like, you have to constantly be working on your relationship. The minute that Scrappy gave her the keys, like, first of all, let's be clear, you got Scrappy being a fucked up whore. You did. You know what I mean? You was in the hot tub with Benzino and everybody else, and then you turn around, you was in L.A. messing with this dude, and then you had, like, two songs, but they never made the radio. You had a glitter situation. I don't know what the fuck you were doing. But now all of a sudden you're with Scrappy. And so I want you men to be very careful of the finta do broads, which are, I'm finta do this, and she was mad because he didn't help her do this. It goes beyond the deception of, you went and made a video and had a video party. Like, motherfucker, your whereabouts were unexplained for long gaps and periods in time. Dudes that I deal with, I can't even go to the fucking grocery store without them being like, what'd you do today? Like, and I wouldn't want to. Like, I wouldn't want for something to be going on in my life that somebody that I love or somebody that I'm dealing with didn't know was going on with me. So you went and shot a video with another producer, rapper, whatever, Loudy, whatever the fuck his name is. And, you know, chemistry is one of those things, and Jahari will tell you, that you just can't fake. You just cannot fake that level of chemistry. So, like, let's just keep it G. Like, you know, and then she turns around and says, Bambi says, if I wanted something with him, you know, there would be something with him. Yeah, you can't tell your man shit like that. Because the first thing he's going to think is that he smashed. Dude smashed. You know, so it is what it is. But that was funny to me. And because it's funny to me when I see people that were shady as fuck anyways in relationships, and then when they get together, the shade gets thrown on them, like the tree gets bigger and shit. So that was funny to me. And then we also had the opportunity over the weekend. This is a great thing that happened. I always say to people, when you're in any type of relationship, whether it's business, personal, pleasure, you have the opportunity to build and you have the opportunity to break. And probably about 2 months ago, I was on a show. Unbeknownst to me, there was a preacher, and he basically cussed me out, motherfucked me, fuck you, you know, whatever. A preacher, let me pause. And it was a panel. So there were two gentlemen and a female. And very typical, the female punked out. She said nothing. When the men tried to come for me, I took a swig of my beverage that day and pretty much ate everybody's face off, and then I ate their arms and shit and spit their bones out. Well, they never gave me the copy of that tape because what I wanted to do was go back and listen to it and hear the complaints from black men that they have about black women, because not that I am the end-all, be-all representative of black women, but, you know, I can voice a lot of opinions because these girls come and tell me, these women, they come and tell me, these are things we're concerned about, these are things we ain't having, this is the shit that I don't like, that's the shit I don't like, you know. So I actually, we were at what's called Art Sparks, and it's a festival every year that they have with a bunch of artists and musicians, and it's at Art Park, which is like our huge, like, outdoor theater. And, you know, if you're from the Western New York, Lewiston, Niagara Falls area, Southern Ontario, then you know what Art Park is. So we, I'm looking at some artwork, and I see, like, a red spray-painted Basquiat crown. I'm like, oh, my God, I love this work, and I saw some other things that I wanted to buy. And I did buy some artwork from my two girlfriends, Sarah Eaton and Tamara. I have pieces of them, you know, from them in my little, you know, situation that will always come with me. If I don't do nothing else, like, those pieces will come with me because they're very personal to me. Sarah actually travels the world. She's been to Chernobyl. She's been, like, she even, it's so funny because she went to Mike Tyson's, like, old house. Like, I think the house where he had, like, the lion and shit. He was with Robin Givens, and someone actually is living in it, but it was almost abandoned. And they actually, I was like, girl, if you could have gotten photos of that house, because I'm, like, obsessed with Mike Tyson because I think he's, like, the man that lives inside my head. So there's, like, a woman, like, a white lady, a Spanish lady, and then there's Mike Tyson that lives inside my head. like sometimes when I speak. And he's actually very smart. People don't know that, but he's actually very smart. If you get the chance, watch his documentary that was just done recently. Not any of the old ones, but the one that was just done recently. I think it was done in the last 2 years. Watch that one. I think it's called Tyson, as a matter of fact. So bought their artwork, and I see this guy at his tent, and he's like, so he's, you know, I'm with Sal Dean, you know, my editor, and he's like, oh, no, I've met you before. I mean, I've called in your show. And I'm like, oh, you know, what show did you call into? And he's like, actually, you called into my show. And I'm like, I'm like, okay. And he goes, no, he goes, I was the other guy on the panel. I'm not the preacher, whatever, whatever. And I was like, oh, you know, give me a hug, whatever. And he was just very, like, taken aback. And he was very cautious at first, I would say, wouldn't you, Saladin? Like, he was very, like, cautious. And I said, listen, let me tell you something. I said, I'm that tree right over there. I'm rooted. So y'all can shoot bullets at me. You can throw glass at me. You can hang shit from, you know, my leaves. It doesn't matter. I'm still rooted. So no matter what you say, I'm rooted in what the fuck I said. So maybe because he wasn't rooted, it was so easy for me to rattle him up. You know, because, of course, now I'm the devil woman. You got this preacher cussing, and nobody will give me the tape. They won't give him the tape to listen to. And I said, the reason I wanted to listen to it, not to release it, because I wouldn't want to ruin a black man's career like that, but is because I want to try to hear what he was saying aside from the yelling. And what I said, this is why I always go with my first instinct, is I say, you don't like fucking women. That's your problem. And there's a lot of black men. Black women, don't be confused. There's a lot of black men that because of their mothers, because of their grandmothers or the lack thereof, they don't like black women. And it has nothing to do with them being gay or anything like that. It has to do with you are in a losing motherfucking battle. And so you have to just love them just a little bit more than you would the average motherfucker because they don't know what that looks like. So the first time that any man tries to verbally or physically attack me, I say, who did it? Who didn't love you enough that you feel like you want to take that shit out on me because I'm the wrong motherfucker? You understand what I'm saying? So just like I could fuck you up beyond all things in the universe, I could love you that way too. So it's really your choice. And so it's unfortunate that the preacher, who is, I believe, younger than me, and I said to the gentleman, I said, does he have an issue with his mother or baby's mother? And by baby's mother, I mean, you know, wife, whatever. And he's like, no, he just got an issue with all women. And so that was a little bit comforting to me that I wasn't wrong because I usually never am because people always forget that in the end, I study people. That's what the fuck I do. Like, I'm the female that will Google your name and go back to 2009 and check what the fuck you were tweeting about in 2009. When your profile name wasn't what it is now. See, you have to be careful, black people, and just people in general. When you go, like, my MySpace name might still be up, but there's a million Denise Scotts, and there's a million Denise, my real government name, because Scott is obviously not my real name anymore. That's my maiden name. I kept my married name, obviously, but it's hard to pronounce, and it's none of your fucking business, but I can go back to 2009 and look at the shit that I was Facebooking about and tweeting about. I'm pretty much even kilter. But if I go back to 2009, November, December, January, July, and you're trolling for bitches and you're seeking, you know, doing attention-seeking behavior and shit like that. And so 2009, we're talking about 6 years ago. Motherfucker, you was in your 30s. So that lets me know that you don't even know who the fuck you are. And so this allows me to formulate a pattern of the shit that you like to do or the shit that you like to see. And it lets me know that you are, you know, how to deal with you. You understand what I'm saying? So some people, I learned a long time ago, not everybody is the same. So you can't be mean to everybody because some people don't respond to that. Like, for example, you know, I had an issue with one of my former best friends came to my parents' house. I just so happened to be there, and she wanted me to fight with her, you know, and I said, you know what? You're abusive, and you want me to fight you because in your mind, you think that if I punch you in the fucking face, that means I love you, and I will not do it because you need to learn other ways to show love and to receive love. So I'm not going to fucking hit you. I'm not going to do it. You want me to, but I'm not going to. And that hurt her more than anything. And I actually saw her recently at a barbecue. We said no words to each other. And I felt very good about it because You didn't get what you wanted. You want to continue down a fucking destructive path, I'm not going to fucking help you. You understand what I'm saying? And some people are just stuck. It's not my fault. There's nothing I could do about it. But I don't want to be stuck. You know, I don't want to be stuck. I want people to love me, and I want, you know, to share life experiences. Now, maybe I don't even know if I can say with someone, because recently, you know, I decided that I wanted to date